Hello everyone, and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor of Cure Panel, joining you from India. And I welcome all of you this evening to Cure Panel's first episode on cancer and exercise. This is Cure Panel's 60th episode, and today we begin our talk series on cancer and exercise with a discussion on exercising with cancer, why and how it helps. We have with us an amazing panel of experts. Dr. Donald Abrams is a cancer and integrative medicine specialist at the UCSF Osher Center for Integrative Medicine. Dr. Donald Abrams has been gracious with his time and is with us on Cure Panel once again. Next on the panel is Dr. June Chan from UCSF. Dr. Chan has broad interest in cancer prevention and public health, in particular, what individuals can do to modify their risk of chronic diseases, comorbidity, and death. She has expertise and interest in epidemiology and medical education and has conducted research on diabetes, pancreatic, colon, and prostate cancer. Her current research is focused on understanding how diet, exercise, hormones, and genetics contribute to prostate cancer incidence, progression, and death. We also have with us the award-winning leader of the fitness industry, Carol Michaels. Carol is a health and wellness expert with more than 17 years' experience and founder and creator of Recovery Fitness, an exercise program designed to help cancer patients recover from surgery and treatments. My co-host for the show and the next panelist is prostate cancer survivor Richard Davis. Richard is a patient advocate at UCSF, has moderated support groups, and is active in National Online Prostate Cancer Forum. He was also responsible for introducing the exercise counseling program at UCSF Cancer Center that brings exercise, the patient, and their medical team together. Welcome to the show, everyone. I would like to inform our audience that Dr. Lee Jones is unable to join us today due to some sudden unforeseen circumstances. Before I begin, I would also like to tell our listeners that if you have a question for our panel, you can let us know by pressing 1 on your keypad, and we will bring you on air to ask your question. You can also email your question to me, priya@trilux.com. I will now hand over to Richard to begin with the panel discussion. Richard, you're on air.
Hello, and welcome to the panelists, as well as all my friends from Inspire and Reluctant Brotherhood and elsewhere. You may wonder why I'm co-hosting, because I'm not a scientist nor a personal trainer. I was diagnosed with locally advanced prostate cancer, and I did over 2 years of hormone therapy. That meant that I had no testosterone in my body, and I was a lifelong endurance athlete. And what I found was that there was absolutely no exercise support at the UCSF Cancer Center, or for that matter, almost anywhere else, back in 2007. I was really lucky to have some very empathetic department chiefs at UCSF, Peter Carroll and Mac Roach, as well as Chuck Ryan in medical oncology, and they were all avid exercisers themselves, and they all agreed there was a big gap. So we established a program at UCSF, which I am hoping to expand elsewhere, that connects patients and their medical team and exercise through free consults with specially qualified exercise counselors. And we also have a pamphlet called Moving Through Cancer, which is available to everybody through a link online. Peter picked up the ball with June Chan. June and I talked several times about seeing if we could get some exercise research done, and Peter was interested too, and they were already looking at ways to do more exercise-related research. And in the past 3 or 4 years, some pretty interesting studies have come out, which June will tell you about. So if you would like any more information on exercise and cancer after the show, you can take a look at the research tab at www.medifit.org. That's on the invitation. There are a lot of excellent questions, We'll cover a lot of topics, and I'm going to kick off with each panelist with a sort of basic question, and hopefully we'll have a lot of time left over to cover the questions that have been sent in and the questions we're going to get right now. So, June, hello again, and you and I have been working on this exercise and cancer issue now for maybe 5 years, and I've seen you make just a huge amount of progress. It's really rewarding. I want to start off by asking you about the study you presented at the 2012 ASCO conference that suggests that vigorous exercise may thwart the progression of prostate cancer. How and why do you think this happens? In layman's terms, does exercise change the pathology of the cells in the immune system? And where has this led in your current research? And I'd also like you to address whether it's appropriate to other types of cancer.
Great. Hi, everybody. Thank you very much, Priya and Rick, for having me on the show and the opportunity to share a little bit about our research. To answer your question specifically about that 2012 study, I'm going to take a step back, and really what led to that was our findings in 2011, where we published two reports looking at two large relatively large populations of men with localized prostate cancer, and in each study we observed a generally consistent finding that self-reported exercise behavior could potentially be related to a benefit with regards to both biochemical recurrence among men with prostate cancer as well as prostate cancer death. And so in these studies, one had about 1,500 men, one had about 2,700 men. You know, we saw benefits around 50 to 60% reduction in the risk of biochemical recurrence or prostate cancer-specific death based on self-reported exercise activity after diagnosis. And what we saw was that really it seemed to be that men had to do something that got their heart rate up. So we really saw the benefit either for what we would call vigorous physical activity, so that would be like running, jogging, swimming, calisthenics, or for self-reported brisk walking pace. So that was a walking pace of about a 20-minute mile or faster. But we did not see it for overall exercise or physical activity, which was very intriguing to us because if you're looking at general cardiovascular benefit or all-cause mortality, you would see a benefit much sooner just for any type of physical activity. So in the study that you're referencing, Rick, we really wanted to know what is special about cardiopulmonary exercise, what was special about vigorous exercise. And we had the opportunity to do really more of an exploratory study, taking advantage of some existing biospecimens that had been collected as part of a previous clinical trial. And we looked again at specifically vigorous physical activity and some biomarker patterns that we could assess in the normal prostate gland, so the normal parts of the prostate gland, from men who did have early stage cancer. And so this shed a little bit of light on potential pathways that could be beneficial. We saw increased activity in DNA repair pathways, inflammatory pathways, oxidative stress pathways, and cell cycling, all which have also been linked to cancer mechanisms. So those are some of the molecular pathways that we're starting to investigate further and confirm in future studies.
So do you think from the research that you've done and knowing the work of your peers that what you've discovered in prostate cancer has an application to other cancers? And I note that some of the work by Melinda Irwin, which preceded yours, has very, very similar overall survival end points as your study.
Absolutely. So actually, just to give people a background, the bulk of the evidence in this area really comes out of the breast cancer literature. I would say at least so there's, say, 40, you know, four dozen studies to date so far focused on exercise in cancer survivors. Probably at least half of those or more are done in women with breast cancer, and those data are largely similar into the findings we've seen now in prostate. They suggest a similar benefit, anywhere from a 20 to 60% reduction in recurrence or other clinically relevant outcomes. And they're, you know, this is still an area where we need to do a lot more research. The benefits seem to be seen from quite a wide range of activity. In some cases, studies suggested that they saw a benefit even if you're participating in 30 minutes a day, whereas others really suggested more intense levels of activity needed to be undertaken to see a benefit. So we still need to do more research in this area, but you're correct. These findings in prostate certainly have been also observed in breast cancer and in colon cancer to date.
So it sounds like the bottom line is we're not quite sure how much exercise every day because there are different variations, but it's highly advisable to do some exercise every day and in the course of that exercise to get your heart rate up.
I would agree. Definitely it's beneficial to get some exercise every day, and we would say that in general for public health for anybody, but I think the message for people living with cancer is, you know, sometimes people have the concern about safety. Is it safe to exercise? Traditionally, you know, a lot of people think they're getting more frail and they might pull back, but certainly from our observational data studies to date and even some clinical trial data, you know, exercise with, you know, some guidance, if you're very new to exercise, that's always recommended. So exercise with some guidance can definitely be undertaken safely, certainly will impart a benefit for all-cause mortality, and now we're seeing some consistent emerging data for cancer-specific outcomes.
I mean, that's really great. I mean, I seem to recall that some of these studies have shown as much as a 60% reduction in or improvement in overall survival for certain cancers.
That is true. Now, these, just to clarify for folks, these numbers, such as a 60% reduction in overall survival, that has been seen in observational studies from breast, colorectal cancer patients, and prostate cancer patients. We have yet, though, to complete a focused randomized clinical trial, you know, where you actually test in an experimental setting the benefits of exercise on cancer survival. So that still needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely working on those types of studies in prostate
mm-hmm.
cancer and in breast cancer, but it takes a lot of money. It takes a long time. There is one clinical trial being undertaken now, specifically in colorectal cancer survivors, with a survival outcome, but it's still in the phase of enrollment.
Yeah, and if I recall when we last spoke, it's very hard to raise money through the NIH and other folks like that because they still don't they don't recognize the benefit of exercise.
I don't know if it's fair to say that they don't recognize the benefit of exercise, but we certainly could use more support from whatever institutions you know are interested in this. As a matter of fact, actually, the NCI. One of the challenges is time to study, you know, fortunately, cancer survivors these days are living longer. And to undertake a study that really wants to look at survival is a very long undertaking in many situations and contexts. So that becomes challenging. But the NCI actually has a current call out right now focused on exercise or weight control programs or interventions in cancer survivors looking at biomarker outcomes. So in recognition that it might be very difficult to look at survival outcomes, it's very expensive, takes a long time, and a lot of people, they are actually, you know, supporting research right now to look at biomarkers. For example, we have a new clinical trial that we're going to open at UCSF and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. It's a dual-site trial focused on men with early-stage prostate cancer pursuing active surveillance. And we are specifically looking at supervised exercise versus usual care and prostate tumor biology changes, as well as other host and systemic factors. So it's a way to, in a study design approach, to sort of address the challenge of really how to do an efficient study in a reasonable amount of time and get answers to the patients who are the millions of patients living with cancer right now.
June, this is all such great information, and I'm so pleased we have the opportunity to put it out to all the folks and others that will listen to this in the future. I've got loads of good questions for you, and I'll come back to you, but I want to welcome Dr. Donald Abrams, who I know for a fact, although I've never seen him, has been a real angel to many, many cancer patients, including good friends of mine. Welcome, Dr. Abrams. I'd like to ask you whether, in your opinion, some cancers respond better to exercise than others, or should everyone diagnosed with cancer exercise, provided that they are able to do so and medically approved to do so?
Well, that's a good question. I agree with June that most of the evidence to date really is around the cancers that are related to hormone production, breast and prostate, because exercise probably reduces estrogen and androgens. And then the special case of colorectal cancer also being one that appears to be quite responsive. I agree that the American Institute for Cancer Research, World Cancer Research Fund, guidelines for reducing the risk of cancer are 10 overall, number 10 being for cancer survivors, follow the 9 guidelines above. And their number one guideline is to be as lean as possible without being underweight. And the number 2 guideline says be physically active for 30 minutes each day. And then the subsequent guidelines talk about nutrition. So clearly AICR puts physical activity right up there as a way to maintain a good body mass index. The American Cancer Society also recommends at least 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity exercise or greater than 75 minutes per week of vigorous exercise as a way to reduce the risk of cancer. In the patients I see at the Osher Center during my integrative oncology consultation, we spend most of the hour talking about lifestyle modification. I am a big fan of nutrition and nutritional interventions in patients with cancer and make the same recommendation for an organic, plant-based, antioxidant-rich, anti-inflammatory whole foods diet for most of the patients I see, because what I say is that cancer is like a weed and other people are taking care of the weed, and it's my job to work with the garden and make the soil as inhospitable as possible to growth and spread of the weed, and hence suggest that fertilizer, organic, plant-based, etc. I also then focus on physical activity, and I believe that the best intervention is a combination of both aerobic activity to increase heart rate and oxygenation, as well as resistance activity, which helps with muscle tone and bone integrity. So many of the patients I see have the bone as an obvious site of metastases, and to keep bones strong, I think, is critical. So, yes, again, as June said, I believe that breast, colon, and prostate are the ones that where the evidence has been most clear, but there's increasing evidence in pancreatic cancer. You know, lung cancer patients, I think, benefit. Physical activity, I think, should be part of the whole spectrum of survivorship. I know my friend Keith Block, who has an integrative oncology center in Evanston, Illinois, has patients receiving chemotherapy while they're treadmilling, because that's how much he believes in the importance of physical activity during cancer treatment.
I've got two buddies going through chemo right now. I'll mention it to them. But I will say to you that in the midst of their chemo, they're off to the gym, they're using the treadmill, they're getting on the exercise bike on a daily basis, and they are actually 3 friends, two with prostate cancer, one with lung cancer, and that they all tell me that they feel the exercise makes a difference, that notwithstanding they feel so fatigued from the chemo that introducing the exercise makes them feel better when they've completed it.
Well, exercise, we know, releases endorphins, which are the body's own endogenous opiates. So they do, and I believe they probably induce endocannabinoids as well. And all of these things do help you feel better, improve your quality of life, and probably help you sleep better. In addition to aerobic and resistance, I do want to put in a plug for yoga. As somebody who took up yoga late in life, only once I turned 60, I definitely wish I had started it much earlier, because yoga is not only strength, aerobic, but it's also balance and flexibility, and it gives you that mind-body component, because you're concentrating on your breath, which is something that we can control either autonomically without thinking about it or by thinking about it, and by having your breath and your movements be intertwined, it's definitely a very, very valuable mind-body intervention, as well as a physical activity, which has been shown in a number of different clinical trials to have benefits in many different ways. Again, frequently for women with breast cancer, because they tend to be a group, because of their long survival and their adequate number, that can be studied most intensely.
One more question before we move on to Carol. Inflammation is often hypothesized to aggravate cancer. So is this consistent with exercise, or are we talking about different types of inflammation?
So I'm very happy to say that I found an article in the ASCO Post, which is the American Society of Clinical Oncology's newspaper from May 15th, written by Kathleen Wessa and Barry Kasselith at Memorial Sloan Kettering on the benefits of exercise in cancer patients. And in answer to your question, increased physical activity decreases systemic inflammatory responses by way of decreased tumor necrosis factor, alpha, interleukin 6, and C-reactive protein synthesis. So there you go. But I will say that we are concerned that marathon runners and people that are excessive in their physical activity may actually have increased inflammatory markers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll be emailing you after the show for that link, and I will put it on the MetaFit website.
Great.
So people can access it.
Yeah, it's very wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I actually exercised every day during I was on Lupron for 27 months and radiation at the beginning and seeds, and other than the day that the day after I got my seeds, I exercised every day, and on the days I felt really crummy, I would just go out for a 30-minute walk. So my exercise of choice is rowing, so it really helped me. Carol, hello again. I haven't spoken to you for a while.
Hi.
But
how
I kept
you?
Your number on my Rolodex, and when I know I needed someone, you were the one.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
My pleasure. Tell us what type of cancer your clients have and at what different stages. And what do you think are the most common side effects from cancer treatment, all types of treatment, surgery, radiation, chemo, hormone therapy, that can be helped and alleviated through exercise?
Well, my clients have all types of cancer. The majority that I work with have breast cancer. The people that I see are in all stages of treatment, and now it's recommended to exercise during chemotherapy. So, we're seeing people during treatment. Really what I try to focus on is to help them deal with the side effects that are caused by the surgery and treatment. So the first side effect that I usually deal with is the loss of range of motion. And due to surgery and treatment, especially for breast cancer and some of the other cancers as well, uterine and ovarian, cause a lot of tightness and poor posture and a forward lean type of posture. So first thing I deal with is just getting the range of motion back with a variety of rehabilitative stretching exercises. Once I see that their range of motion is just about where it should be, which is about 80% to 90% of range of motion, I do start to add strength training. I find that the exercise program does help them with fatigue. They usually come in feeling exhausted, and they push themselves to attend, and afterwards are just so glad they did. It really has been very helpful with fatigue. I've seen a lot of improvement with joint pain, and I believe there was a study that showed that exercising, especially with breast cancer survivors, while on Arimidex, helps with joint pain. So I am seeing improvement in joint pain. And I do focus a lot on strength training, because osteoporosis is such a common side effect of people who are on hormonal treatment. So strength training is a part of every exercise session.
You know, you raised such a good point with the osteoporosis because I was a marathoner for years, and when I went on the Lupron, I discovered I was osteoporotic. I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got Zometa on a fairly once a year, and I did exercise. I did a lot of weight training, and I improved my density in my spine from minus 2.5 when I started to minus 1.5 3 years later when I finished. And that was just through daily exercise, three times a week I was doing weights and the Zometa. And I will tell you, I think I was stronger then than I am now. So the guys out there who are on hormone therapy or about to go on hormone therapy, I just want to encourage you, don't be afraid of the weights. Start with light weights and build up, but it can make a tremendous difference, and you can retain your muscle mass, and you can certainly build your bone density.
Correct.
I want to ask you, Carol, and maybe you know, I'm going to start with some of the questions because I want to have a lot of time for questions, and anybody who has a question online right now should start calling in or emailing. I think. Priya's email is priya@trialx.com. But I'm going to ask you a question, Carol, and then maybe Dr. Abrams will follow up afterwards. You mentioned that exercise can help fatigue. One of the questions that came in is the following. Cancer treatments themselves can have a huge impact on the well-being of the patient, like chemotherapy and radiation therapy that cause a lot of nausea and vomiting and GI upsets. Do you think that exercise helps to reduce cancer-induced symptoms? And we've talked about fatigue, so let's focus on some of the other things, and particularly people that are going through chemo right now, that have maybe had radiation, had surgery. How does exercise help those folks?
Well, you know, one thing I just want to mention for the people that I work with that are in my small group exercise classes, the big improvement that I see is an emotional improvement because the exercise groups become a support group as well. And, you know, I think when someone feels better emotionally just by attending, even when they're going, you know, through such serious chemotherapy treatments, they just seem to have better spirit and emotional improvement, which, you know, to me makes all their, seems like their aches and pains seem to decrease due to just feeling happier and in a better mood.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly know that, and I've used exercise to help me with depression for the last 30 or 40 years. So, and that, I always tell folks that they can do well. Dr. Abrams, how do you feel that exercise can help the patient beyond mood and fatigue? Are there any other areas where you think it improves the quality of life?
Well, I was just going to say quality of life because, you know, that is sort of a all-encompassing patient-reported outcome, if you will, just that vague whatever different people have different measurements of. But, you know, we haven't talked about overweight. I believe that we have an epidemic of obesity in the United States that is contributing to the development of a number of chronic diseases, including cancer. And certainly if people initiate a physical activity program who previously had been more sedentary, they are likely going to be able to lose some weight. And much of that weight will be fat, which we know makes hormones, which drive hormonally responsive tumors. So losing weight, you know, is not necessarily... Well, it is a patient-reported outcome measure, but it's also quite objective as opposed to subjective. But I think, yeah, mood, energy, quality of life, depression, And, you know, again, as we mentioned in the study in stage 3 cancer patients that Jeffrey reported on, those patients who exercise the equivalent of 60 minutes a day, 5 or 6 days a week, actually had significantly improved outcome compared to the patients who didn't.
I'm going to ask one more question from my list before I go to Priya, because I know she's got at least one person on the line. And this one's for Donald and Anne Carol and June. You may all have some input here. How long do you think the exercise intervention should last to be effective in cancer patients?
Richard,
forever.
Can you clarify what do you mean by how long? You mean how much in one session?
Yes.
People
should
exercise
should it,
forever.
Yes, I mean, you know, people say, oh, how long do I have to do this for? And hopefully they find out that they can't live without it. That's
right.
what we hope.
We really hit the nail on the head with that question, because people go to physical therapy, their insurance pays for a certain amount, and then most of them are not where they need to be. So, you know, that's where the cancer exercise specialist comes in. And, you know, I found that people have very specific issues, balance issues due to chemotherapy, sarcopenia, things that really need to be addressed through exercise. And clearly side effects last for a year to two, but, you know, as everyone said, you need to participate forever in an exercise program.
Mm-hmm. June, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, sure. So similar to what has been said, in general, people, you know, regardless of whether you have cancer, the recommendation is people should be physically active as long as they can, mm-hmm. as much as they can. For people living with cancer, I think maybe it's difficult to hear that message. If you're not feeling well, this is adding on is a huge lifestyle change. Maybe the messaging really should be, you know, even as little as a 10 or 15 minute walk a day, start wherever you're at and try to achieve your goal. That will have a benefit. That has been shown mm-hmm. through large population studies to have a benefit for death outcomes. If you are even walking 15 minutes a day at a normal pace, for a cancer-specific benefit, the data are suggesting that if you really want to prevent a cancer death, cancer recurrence, more intense or vigorous activity may be needed. But people are probably, you know, for general people, it's good just to prevent death. That's a good start. So I think, you know, there's different messages, but start where you're at. If you can do a 10-minute walk and to start with and slowly get up to 30 minutes and then maybe a little bit of swimming and other things, hopefully that will catch on. I did want to mention on your earlier question about specific side effects, there are also clinical trials and, you know, short-term trial data that do suggest that some supervised and specific type of exercise programs exist for also alleviating the side effect of incontinence in men who've been treated with prostate cancer. So the data are limited, but specifically there are some, you know, guided regimens, pelvic floor exercises that have been shown to help with rehabilitation. I believe Dr. Jones, actually, usually he's not here, but he would also talk about the benefits of specific programs to relieve the lymphedema post-breast surgery. So there are those out there as well.
Total truth.
Not only, I mean, I happen to know with prostate cancer that not only incontinence afterwards, but the study at Washington University in St. Louis a few years back, which suggested that the better shape you're in going in, the less likely you're going to have problems with incontinence coming out after surgery.
Yeah.
So that's another good study. Priya, let me go over to you, and I guess we have a question online.
Thank you, Richard. Yes, we have a person with a question. Matt, you're unmuted. Please ask your question.
Well, thanks, Priya. Good afternoon or good evening, everybody. I'm a multiple myeloma patient, and so myeloma patients are dealing with bone damage or the potential for bone damage, but we're told to do weight-bearing exercise. So I guess maybe this is for the doctor or for everybody. How do we know what's okay to do and what's too much in terms of our bones and protecting them yet strengthening them?
This is a situation where I would refer to the personal trainer at UCSF who is trained in, you know, safety in these sorts of situations, and defer to that person's judgment on that. I agree that patients with bone metastases, I might not want them, doing yoga inversions, et cetera. So I think a trained professional would be a good thing to include in this discussion.
Mm-hmm. So, Carol, it looks like you just got past the ball.
You would just really be conservative and start with very, very light weights and just very, very slowly progress. And it's very frustrating for cancer patients because you might have been lifting 20 pounds, 50 pounds, 100 pounds prior to the diagnosis, but it's really trial and error at this point to see, what you can handle safely. And it's better to just start with a light weight and just gradually progress. Really, it's a trial and error type of thing with this situation and common sense and listening to your body.
We're very lucky at UCSF, as Dr. Abrams mentioned, that we do have two or three specialized cancer trainers on board. But, Carol, what can people do and what should they be looking for if they don't have that? How do they find a trainer that is specialized in working with people with cancer? I mean, you may want to just mention I'm thinking of the ACSM special certification that you have. So can we help people identify trainers?
Yes, you can go to the ACSM website where they do actually have a listing of everyone who has the credential of a cancer exercise trainer. So that would be a good start. But even at that, there still are still not a lot of people credentialed with that extra certification. Some of the physical therapists, I believe at this point now, are specializing in oncology physical therapy, so that would be another route to go. There are special books and DVDs which could give you good guidance as well. But that's one thing that I would love to see. We definitely need more fitness professionals who have experience and credentials in this field.
Yeah, and
Rick,
if there's anybody on the line that that thinks that they're at an institution that would like to institute a program like we have at UCSF, please let me know and we'll start working with them. We don't have any other questions lined up right now from listeners, so if you've got a question out there, please call it in or send it in to Priya. In the meantime, I'm going to come back to some of the questions that were submitted beforehand, and I think this is a good question and probably concerns a number of people online. Are there any benefits of exercise training in cancer cachexia? That's where a patient is already losing a lot of muscle and growing frailer every day, losing weight. How should they and what should they be looking at in terms of considering exercise? And Dr. Abrams, I'll have you start off with that one, and then maybe Carol can come in and tell us how she works with people that are losing weight.
Yeah, again, I would have to have Greta over at the Cancer Center, even though I feel I like and know quite a bit about nutrition and cancer. When you get to actually protein and muscle and, if somebody's suffering from cancer cachexia, and it's all about energy in and energy out, so I wouldn't want them to expend more energy than they're taking in because that might exacerbate this protein and muscle mass loss issue. So, I would really ask my cancer nutritionist to make sure the patient is ingesting adequate protein and adequate calories before I have them, if they're truly cachectic, participate in too vigorous a resistance exercise program, because you don't want to make it worse.
No, obviously. Carol, what do you do when you've got people coming in who want to exercise, feel like they need to exercise, but they're losing weight? How do you work with them?
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, there have not been too many in my 17, 18 years of working with cancer patients, but the few that have been in that situation, we just kind of modified to a lot of relaxation breathing. We do a lot of Pilates, which I really do want to talk about, which is another wonderful type of exercise in addition to yoga that was mentioned earlier. And I like Pilates exercises in particular because of the deep breathing that goes along with it, so you really get a good relaxation effect. Also, for those that have or at risk for lymphedema, when you're deep breathing and there's the pressure of the belly button going towards the spine during the exercises, if the center is a lymph center, hopefully that might be moving some of the lymph fluid around. So, we find that the Pilates and relaxation breathing type of exercises are very gentle. And with that type of population, also with the group exercise, they just enjoy being with their friends, and the camaraderie of the group is very uplifting.
Yeah, I remember probably 6 or 7 years ago, women who suffered from lymphedema after breast cancer were not encouraged to use light weights, but now that has changed completely, and there are a couple of studies that have suggested that actually it might be a good thing. If Donald, you want to say something about that?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely correct that is a situation where things have changed, and I know we're also doing some studies looking at yoga in women with lymphedema. Yeah, it's true. These things change.
Yeah, and I was so thrilled. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to say I was so thrilled that when the study came out saying that it was safe for women to use weights and possibly beneficial because of the bone thinning osteoporosis issue. That's one of the ways to address osteoporosis, and it would be very sad if women who are on hormonal therapy couldn't strength train. So that was really great news, and we find in all the years we've doing it, we've never seen one flare up of lymphedema.
Well, that's great. Anybody out there who would like to ask a question, I believe all you have to do is press 1 on your dial pad and you'll be able to talk to Priya. Now, we have a question that's been sent in, and I'm going to read it. It says, Dr. Abrams mentioned a study that showed physical activity was beneficial for inflammation and cancer aggravation. That's the study I'm going to get the link for and post later. What was the intensity that this exercise was done at, and how was this measured, heart rate, other?
No, what I read was just a paragraph that said increased physical activity decreases systemic inflammatory response by way of those mechanisms, decreasing tumor necrosis factor alpha, et cetera. There was no, in that citation it says nothing, to answer the question that's being asked.
I did
want to make a point. I sent that to Priya already. I did want to make a point, though, about research, and I don't want to sound anti-intellectual because I am a clinical investigator, but I also believe that the degree of evidence should be directly proportional to the potential for the intervention to do harm. This is something that my Andrew Weil, one of my teachers, has taught me, so that if I tell patients, I'm going to give you this new chemotherapy, it's going to make your hair fall out, you're going to be nauseated for 3 days, and it's going to suppress your bone marrow, then you're going to want me to show you a lot of evidence. But if I'm going to say, why don't you take a 30-minute walk 5 days a week, what's the potential to do harm there? And rather than randomize, because what is the placebo of a 30-minute walk? I don't think we're really ever going to get great evidence you know, there's it's hard to do placebo. And so, you know, why don't we just use our common sense and know that, you know, this is a guideline from the American Institutes for Cancer Research and the American Cancer Society for reducing the risk of cancer. And I always say, if something's good for reducing the risk of cancer, then, as they say, for cancer survivors, follow the 9 guidelines above. Then let's do it also in patients with cancer. And let's not wait for randomized controlled trials necessarily to demonstrate the benefit when it seems fairly obvious that it's of benefit.
I've got a more technical question here for June and possibly for Donald. There is increased endogenous glucose production in cancer patients. I guess that means that cancer patients seem to make more glucose. How do cancer cells respond differently than normal cells in terms of glucose metabolism while exercising? And we also know that sugar and glucose may not be good in the cancer world. How does this change with exercise-induced glucose production? So, June, do you want to kick that one off?
Sure, I can take a stab at that. I think this question is actually pulling together different pieces of data that have been reported from different types of studies. What is generally understood at this stage is that, you know, several studies have reported that having higher circulating insulin levels has been associated with cancer outcomes. It's been reported for prostate cancer or precursors of insulin, markers of insulin levels have been associated. And similarly, circulating levels of components of what we call the insulin-like growth factor axis have been linked to various types of cancers, the development of those cancers in particular. And what we also know is that exercise modulates those factors in the body. So you can reduce your insulin levels, some studies have shown that you potentially can reduce the IGF axis, reduce IGF-1 in particular through exercise. So they're connecting the dots here that, again, one of the mechanisms by which exercise may be imparting a benefit is the systemic effect on improving or influencing your insulin or insulin-like growth factor metabolism. So that is certainly an area of increasing research. We are doing studies where you're also looking at components, the active components of insulin or insulin-like growth factor in the organ site itself, not systemically, so looking in the breast tissue and prostate tissue. So we still have a lot to learn here. So a lot more research is needed to really nail down the true biology. But the dots that are being connected are associations between exercise and a benefit on insulin metabolism and the IGF pathways, and then linking those, that's the observation that those factors have been linked to cancer outcomes.
Dr. Abrams, would you like to?
Yes, no, I definitely agree with June, and the article that I've mentioned a number of times, Kathleen Wessa, says that multiple mechanisms enhance insulin sensitivity, decrease insulin secretion, decrease insulin C-peptide, and decrease interleukin-17 levels, all of this making the body more insulin responsive, lowering glucose, and also decreasing the overall inflammatory response. So, yes, another mechanism by which exercise in cancer patients and in people without cancer to help prevent cancer is beneficial is through this insulin-like growth factor, insulin sensitivity pathway and network.
And this has been shown, you know, there are several studies reporting on the potential mechanisms, not just the one that Donald has been referring to these. And the consistent pathways that seem to pop up do seem to be insulin, VEGF, and inflammation, potentially also the immune pathways, as you mentioned, not just IL-17, but also in particular IL-6 has been more reproducible. Mm. So it affects on cytokines and oxidative stress pathways as well.
Again, let's switch gears and go back to something a bit more practical, practical in the sense of how patients can use on a day-to-day basis. What are some of the risks that a cancer patient should keep in mind while exercising, and what are some ways to cut down on those risks? Carol?
Well, before they start an exercise program, of course, they need to get clearance from their health professional, because some of the treatments can cause cardiac issues and other issues. So you really do need to make sure that you you have a full medical checkup and clearance before exercise. You know, you can be anemic. A lot of people that I've been working with have had neuropathy. That seems to be a very common side effect. I've found in my experience, exercise, you know, just as an observation, has been helping the people I've been working with neuropathy. And most importantly, we do training for balance, because when there's neuropathy in the foot, obviously balance is affected, and you know, we just try to keep all the surrounding muscles as strong as possible, so it will help them prevent falls, which is really one of the goals of my exercise programs.
What sort of exercises do you incorporate to specifically address neuropathy, Carol?
Well, we try to make sure that they get an aerobic component almost on a daily basis. And I usually recommend a recumbent bike, just because of the risk of having a balance issue and falling. So, recumbent bike is very, very safe, and a lot of the people I work with have access to it. And then, in addition to aerobic, various strength training exercises, done from standing or in a prone or supine position, various leg lifts with weights added to it, and some very basic traditional strength training exercises would be appropriate for neuropathy. But it's really been a very common issue, and very, very frustrating for the patients.
I'd just like to echo that.
Please go ahead, Dr. Abrams.
But I just wanted to echo that when I give my exercise recommendations, when I write my note, under my physical activity, I often have to say limited by neuropathy. It is really frustrating when, patients have this chemotherapy-induced neuropathy. More and more we're curing patients of their cancer, and they're disabled by their neuropathy, and it's very distressing.
I mean, what it does sound like to me with neuropathy is that if you can improve your circulation, you're going to address the neuropathy. I mean, is that an oversimplification?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think so. It's not circulation, it's the
nerves
that are damaged, not the circuit, not the vessels.
Mm-hmm.
So, nope.
Oh, okay.
Well, wish it were so, but...
I'm going to throw in, we've still got 3 or 4 minutes, and I've got a couple more questions here. I'm going to throw in one for the prostate cancer guys. I'd like to ask you, Dr. Abrams, and possibly Carol and June. June may have some input on this one. How exercise impacts and helps the side effects for men who are on androgen deprivation therapy, which may be a little different to breast cancer anti-androgens. It may include LHRH drugs, which stop the production of testosterone altogether and estrogen.
Well, I mean, if testosterone is really important for building muscle mass and decreasing fat, and when you don't have it, my patients get a body habitus that's not what they're used to and not what they desire. They can do a lot of, I'll defer to Carol on this, but they can do a lot of resistance work and maybe won't build the muscle that they want to. I mean, I'm a 64-year-old man who goes to the gym and has a personal trainer, and I notice that my muscle mass isn't what it used to be. So I think in the absence of the levels of testosterone that we have when we're 30 and 40, it's sometimes a little bit more difficult to build that body mass. On the other hand, aerobic activity that increases circulation may help with male vitality, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is some evidence that men who are more physically active have less erectile dysfunction.
And as we've said, we know exercise can help with incontinence issues, build strength, and one of the big issues that we've touched on several times is mood, and testosterone affects the brain chemistry, and so many men come to hormone therapy having never experienced depression, and it just hits them like a hammer, and one way to alleviate that black cloud is by exercising, because that helps to regulate the endorphins and other brain chemicals that have been taken away by the lack of testosterone. So and by the way, I'm in your camp. I also notice every time I get on that Ergon, I can't see the numbers like I used to see the numbers. So I understand. June, can you talk a little bit about the challenge study in Canada? And what it's doing, somebody wrote in to ask about it, and I believe it's a fairly widespread study for a cancer patient.
Sure, I can tell you a little bit about this. This is a study that's targeted to enroll patients who I believe are sort of higher-risk colorectal cancer patients. The study is open in Australia and in Canada, and their goal was to enroll nearly 1,000 patients. They've been recruiting since 2009 and have recruited only about 300 patients to date. So I would encourage folks, if they're interested in this, to check it out on their website. I think we can post that on this website a little bit later. It's again, if you're in Canada or Australia, I hope we have a broad listening audience. This study could really use more participants to meet the goal. Their goal is to look at survival. So does a supervised exercise, actually I'm not sure it's a supervised exercise, but does an exercise intervention, they're targeting increasing to 150 minutes per week, or increasing by 150 minutes per week versus usual care. Does that improve survival in patients diagnosed with colorectal cancer? So it's a Canadian-Australian collaborative clinical trial.
So this is solely for colorectal patients?
Yes. This is targeted at patients with colorectal cancer, yes. So post-treatment, let's see. Patients treated with surgery and chemotherapy. So they're high-risk they want high-risk colon cancer survivors. Actually, colon cancer, not colorectal. Colon cancer survivors.
Colon cancer.
We can post the information.
Well,
there's a toll-free number for people who are interested.
Okay, we'll try and get that to Priya, and somehow or other we'll pass it along. And I want to thank you, all three of you. This has been terrific, and you've passed so much great information on to the audience out there. I'm going to hand it back to Priya to close out, because we're almost at the end of the hour. Priya.
Thank you, Richard. I think you did an absolutely wonderful job. It was great co-hosting with you, Richard. Dr. Abrams, Dr. Chan, and Carol, thank you so much for being with us today, taking time out and helping us. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
This is our, dear listeners, this is our first episode on cancer and exercise, and hopefully you've picked up a lot of tips from our experts. Please let us know your feedback and also what you would like to hear discussed on this talk series going forward. The link for today's show will be shared with all the participants. Please join us again on 26th June at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, where we will be discussing prostate cancer and clinical trials with Dr. Ian Thompson from the University of Texas Health Science Center. Please visit curepanel.carefeed.net for details of our upcoming shows, or you can always mail me, priya@trilix.com. Thank you so very much.